in the limelight.
The findings from a pilot study involving 36 patients raised the possibility that COVID may cause microscopic damage to the lungs that is not detected using routine tests. We'll prepare for you an article written jointly by Hannah Devlin and Nicola Davis. The piece is titled Long COVID Study Finds Abnormality in Lungs That Could Explain Breathlessness. Abnormalities have been identified in the lungs of long COVID patients that could offer a potential explanation for why some people experience breathlessness long after their initial infection. The findings from a pilot study involving 36 patients raised the possibility that COVID may cause microscopic damage to the lungs that is not detected using routine tests. Breathlessness is a symptom in the majority of long COVID patients, but it has been unclear whether this is linked to other factors such as changes in breathing patterns, tiredness, or something more fundamental. According to Dr. Emily Fraser, a consultant at Oxford University Hospital and a co-author of the study, the latest findings are the first evidence that underlying lung health could be impaired. Dr. Emily Fraser said, "It is the first study to demonstrate lung abnormalities in people with long COVID who are breathless and where other investigations are unremarkable. It does suggest the virus is causing some kind of persistent abnormality within the microstructure of the lungs or in the pulmonary vasculature." She added more work would be required to clarify the clinical significance of the findings, including how the apparent abnormalities relate to breathlessness. Claire Steeves, a clinical senior lecturer at King's College London who was not involved in the study, said the findings would be of significant interest to anyone living with long-term breathlessness after COVID. She said they suggest that the efficiency of the lung in doing what it is meant to do, exchange carbon dioxide and oxygen, may be compromised, even though the structure of the lung appears normal. Adding, "However, we really need to await the completion of the study to know whether these early findings are robust, and if so, how much they explain and what the ramifications are in terms of potential treatments." Dr. Emily Fraser and her colleagues are the latest group to highlight physiological differences seen in people with long COVID, with research published recently pointing to an antibody signature that could help identify those most at risk. The latest study, which is aiming to recruit 400 participants, is using a specialized magnetic resonance imaging technique in which patients breathe in xenon gas while lying in a scanner. The gas can be traced as it moves from the lungs into the bloodstream, giving a reading of how the lungs are functioning. This contrasts with CT scans, which show just the structure of the lungs. The pilot compared three groups: patients diagnosed with long COVID who have normal CT scans, people who had been hospitalized with COVID more than 3 months previously and were not experiencing long COVID, and a healthy control group. The initial results published on the BioRxiv preprint server show there is significantly impaired gas transfer from the lungs to the bloodstream in these long COVID patients, even when other tests are normal. Similar abnormalities have been detected in COVID patients who had been hospitalized with more severe disease. Professor Fergus Gleeson, a radiologist at Oxford University Hospital NHS Foundation Trust and the study's chief investigator, said, "These patients have never been in hospital and did not have an acute severe illness when they had their COVID-19 infection. Some of them have been experiencing their symptoms for a year after contracting COVID-19." Professor Fergus Gleeson said the team were now hoping to look at what proportion of patients with long COVID have abnormal scans and determine the significance of the abnormality and whether it improves over time. Dr. Emily Fraser said the findings did not undermine the relevance of rehabilitation programs, such as breathing retraining for those with disordered patterns of breathing, for instance. She said, "Rehabilitation strategies are really helpful. We can make progress and set people on the right track so people shouldn't think I've got lung damage and so there's no point." Dr. Louise Siegfried, a public health specialist at the University of Oxford who was not involved in the research, said the findings highlighted the need for those who had continuing symptoms to be given comprehensive diagnostic assessments. She said, "These early findings are really interesting and in line with other emerging data on lung perfusion defects post-SARS-CoV-2 infection seen in adults as well as adolescents. Furthermore, research by the UK's Office for National Statistics suggests vaccination could reduce the risk of long COVID. The study of more than 6,000 adults found those who were double vaccinated had a 41% lower likelihood of self-reporting COVID symptoms 12 weeks after first testing positive. Overall, 9.5% of the double vaccinated group reported experiencing long COVID, defined as symptoms lasting more than 4 weeks, compared with 14.6% of a socio-demographically matched group who were unvaccinated. Dr. David Strain, a clinical senior lecturer at the University of Exeter Medical School and the British Medical Association's lead on long COVID, said the Office of National Statistics findings fitted with research published recently that showed low levels of certain antibodies were more common in those who developed long COVID than in patients who swiftly recovered. He said, "We know that the vaccines trigger these immune responses," adding, "If you approach a COVID infection with high levels of these immunoglobulins, it's less likely to become long COVID." Dr. David Strain noted that it was reassuring that vaccination appeared to mitigate the risk of long COVID. A limitation of the study was that because of the timing of the vaccination program, the double vaccinated participants were sampled at a later time point, 238 days on average, than those in the unvaccinated group. So changes in dominant COVID variants in circulation and other factors that varied over the course of the pandemic could have influenced the results. The study was also observational, and while the two groups were matched for age and other socioeconomic factors, there may have been other differences between the groups, meaning the study could not conclusively prove that vaccination caused the different rates of illness. Separately, the Office of National Statistics found that differences in death rates between people from different ethnic backgrounds have persisted since the start of the vaccination program, with the rate of death involving COVID highest for the Bangladeshi group, 5 times greater than white British group for males, 4.5 times greater for females, followed by the Pakistani group, 3.1 times for males and 2.6 times for females, and black Africans, 2.4 times for males and 1.7 times for females. In most cases, the different rates were explained by where people lived, social disadvantage, occupation, overall health, and vaccination status. However, the Bangladeshi group and Pakistani men remained at higher risk than average even after adjusting for these factors. Previous research highlighted a gene more common in South Asian populations that could place this group at high risk from COVID. Vahan Nafilyan of the Office of National Statistics said, "Today's analysis shows that since the vaccination program began, the risk of COVID-19 death has continued to be higher in most ethnic minority groups than in the white British group. For the first time, we show that the lower vaccination coverage in some ethnic groups also contributes to the elevated risk of COVID-19 death, particularly in the Black African and Black Caribbean groups." The latest data from the Office of National Statistics, based on swabs collected from randomly selected households, suggests that COVID infection levels fell in England, also in Wales and Scotland recently, although the trend was unclear in Northern Ireland. The estimate suggests about 2,629,000 people, or about 1 in 20 in England, had COVID in the week ending 22nd of January. The study also shows that while infection levels are falling in most age groups, they are rising in school-age children. Similar findings have been reported in other research, including the REACT-1 study, the latest results of which were released recently by Imperial College London. According to the Office of National Statistics figures for the week ending 22nd of January, the percentage of those testing positive for COVID increased in England among children between the ages of 2 and 6, as well as for those in school year 7 to 11, with almost 12% of the former and more than 6% of the latter testing positive. While some scientists have called for renewed efforts to vaccinate adolescents and expand the program to all children aged 5 and over, others have emphasized that COVID is generally a mild infection for the age group, and that there is a tight risk benefit involved.